On the telephone line, we're joined by Chad Finn of the Boston Globe and Boston.com. Good Monday there, Mr. Finn.
Play Pessy for me, Rich.
Oh. You got to sound more breathy like Jessica Walter did.
Yeah. I watched that movie, Play Missy for Me. I thought it was like a Casablanca type of thing, and it's apparently not. A little few more stabbings in it.
Yes.
Than I expected.
Absolutely. A great movie, though.
Yeah, terrific.
But true story there, I'll give you the short version, but this was back many years ago when I was young and single and foolish. I'm only one of those things now. But a young woman was, I guess, sort of stalking me, bringing food to the radio station, and then showed up at my apartment.
And oh, my goodness.
And that was very upset. And then I told a couple of friends about it, and that night, middle of the night, my phone rang, and I answered the phone, and somebody said, "Play Misty for me." And I freaked out, and then I heard the laughing of my idiot friends and realized it was them.
Oh, man, that's a good one.
Yeah, appreciated that a lot. Well, we're ready for some baseball around these parts of the season starting later this week. Now, this assumes, of course, that the Red Sox can find enough healthy guys to go out there, with 8 of them now in contact tracing. Any further news on that?
Yeah, it sounds like they're in the clear there. Matt Barnes, I can't remember how they called it, a non-contagious positive or something like that. It sounds like he had the situation is that he had COVID previously, didn't know it, and so he's not contagious now, so he's back with the team, and all the guys that were concerned about that were away from the team are also back. So kind of an odd twist to this whole thing, but Joel Sherman for the MLB Network and the Post broke that story today, and Barnes is back with the club as of this afternoon.
Well, that's good news indeed. Now, we've seen some interesting signs, some pretty good pitching lately. Tanner Houck looking good again. Martin Perez throwing the ball well. All they're doing is setting me up for a crushing disappointment in June, right?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we all did our predictions for the Global Baseball section this week, and I think it was 6 of us, and nobody picked them to make the playoffs, and I think I probably was the closest one to doing so. I think they're going to be around 83-84 wins, and 2 years ago, last time we had a normal season, the lowest win total for a wild card team was 89, so I think they'll be a little bit out of it, but they'll be in the race to the end, but won't ultimately get in. I was starting to think it was going to be worse than that. When some of these things started happening this week with the tests for Barnes and Christian Vasquez taking a ball off his eye socket and E-Rod coming down with a dead arm. But it feels like they've actually dodged a couple of bullets there. Vasquez says he's 99% sure he'll be ready for opening day. Barnes is back with the team. We're still waiting for more information on that. And Erod had a really good bullpen session. It sounds like they're just being cautious. And in the meantime, given Houck a chance to make the team, which he probably deserved anyway, they were sending him to the alternate site. But there's little doubt he's one of their 5 best starters. So the things that seemed like they were really going wrong and that it might be going off the rails here early in the season when they desperately need a good start, playing 6 of their first 9 against the Orioles, maybe things aren't quite so bad and they can exhale a little bit here going into the season.
I take no issue with any of your predictions. You've gone Yankees, White Sox, Angels. I think I would probably agree with all of those. And then Twins and Rays as the wild card teams. Not the Blue Jays. I kind of like the Blue Jays. Am I off base on that?
No, they're pretty loaded offensively, but I wonder what happens if Ryu gets hurt or isn't quite healthy and Robbie Ray ends up being the number one starter. They have a really promising pitching prospect in Nate Pearson, but I don't think they quite have the pitching depth that they would like to have at this point. Springer's going into the season with an injury, might not be ready for opening day, so things aren't quite lined up ideally for them right now, but that's still a really talented offensive team. And I bet Vlad Guerrero Jr. is the breakout star of this season, that he's going to he's going to put up those offensive numbers that people were expecting from him when he first came up after he hit over 400 down in AA, down in Hampshire. So it's a really good offensive team. I just think they're an injury or two away from to their pitching staff away from being in a pretty desperate situation, which you could probably also say about the Red Sox.
I hope you're right about the Angels. Baseball needs to get Mike Trout some more postseason exposure.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it drives me crazy. I hear this rationalization from Red Sox fans all the time. It's part of the reason why I picked the Angels there out of spite. But the Red Sox fans that are used say, well, look how many playoff games Mike Trout has won as a justification for trading Mookie Betts. Well, all right, Mookie Betts has won two of the last three World Series, and I like his chances for three or four this year. It's not about one great player in baseball, obviously, but it certainly helps to have that great player. The Angels' issues have no reflection on Mike Trout. They've done an absolutely terrible job of surrounding him with talent. That's getting a little bit better. They have some pretty good offensive prospects coming up. Jared Walsh, first baseman, put up great numbers last year. Joe Adell really struggled in the majors, but is one of the best prospects in baseball. And it looks like Ohtani is going to really be able to contribute in the way they hope this year. Maybe as a hitter, and maybe even as a pitcher, I think he really can hit anyway. So I think this is the year. I couldn't pick the Astros. I feel like some of the issues we saw with them last year are legitimate, and it feels like it might be a little bit of a transition year for Oakland. But I would like to see the Angels get in because Trout's an all-time great, and he deserves that October showcase.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. As part of the season preview in the Globe, you wrote about the situation at Nesson, and it looks like we'll see significant amounts of both Dennis Eckersley and Jerry Remy, including somewhere around 50 games of the three-man booth.
Yeah, it's interesting with that. Both Eck and Remy, the number they put on it was around 30 or 40 together, but the number of Nesson people, executives ultimately making the decision, said it'll be more than the number they had last year. And I think they did around 55 last year, where it was all three of them. It seemed like it was all of the games because they only played 60, but there were a couple times where it was just two guys. I think it's going to be around 55 or 60 and that they'll end up doing more together than they think right now. And then the individual numbers that they have, Remy's down for 103 games and Eckersley's down for about 75, is basically Nesson giving them what they would like to do. X said 75 was perfect for him. 103 is great for Remy. And they're both happy. Neither one of them likes to travel. Jerry for health reasons and Eckersley just for personal reasons. Doesn't like going on the road because it, you know, kind of brings back some bad memories from his playing days. They both like doing the games from the studios, the road games from the studio, much better than traveling. So that's why both of them have their number hiked up a little bit from last year. It's just because they're going to be doing more road games from the Nesson Studios in Watertown rather than not traveling for them like they would have done in a previous year.
Well, and you've got to have the right guy in the middle to make that work, too. And I still hear from people, I'm sure you do, too, who love Don Rossillo.
Yeah.
I did, too. But I think just Dave O'Brien is the consummate professional and is able to make that work because you've got to have somebody there setting up Eckersley and Remy, and Dave knows when to lead him in a certain direction and when to get out of the way.
Yeah, he does. He's a pro, a total pro. There's like three or four guys on ESPN that sound just like him.
Right.
Sometimes I turn out, is this Dan Shulman, you know, back when he was on, is this OB or is this Sean McDonough? It takes a minute for it to click in, but yeah, he does. And both Remy and Eckersley really praise him as someone who doesn't get enough credit. And I understand to a degree why it is. Don Rossillo was really popular. He was really good, and he got screwed here. The management made a decision that just showed how clueless they were about how he was perceived by Red Sox fans. O'Brien, Tom Werner decided he wanted to move O'Brien over from radio to TV, and that kind of screwed Don over. And fans, once they got wind of what really happened there, didn't let it go. And I don't think Rossillo has completely either, but it's been 6 years, and you still hear it every time you say anything positive about Dave O'Brien. Yeah, but he's not Don. And I think that gets to Dave a little bit. Sometimes he generally handles it pretty well, but you keep hearing that every day whenever, whenever your name is mentioned, it can wear on you a little bit.
Now, what's going on the radio side? Who's going to be working with Joe this year?
Well, Joe's back for, what year is this? He's here in 83. What's this?
39? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, 83. Jeez. So Joe will be doing that. Will Fleming, who did such a good job with Joe last year, will be the primary second guy in the booth. And I'm really high on him. His brother Dave is a really well-respected Giants broadcaster. Will's really good, too. Joe really likes working with him. And then Sean McDonough is going to do a bunch of games. Don't know the exact number. Basically, what WEI does is say, what games do you want to work, Sean? And they let him pick the schedule, and he gets those games. So I imagine you'll hear him on some Yankees games. You know, he did the London games a couple of years ago to get the trip over there. So you'll hear him, but his schedule's so packed anyway that it takes some juggling for them to get it lined up quite the way that they want. It takes a little bit of time, but he'll be on there quite a bit. Lou Maloney will do some as well. So it's not quite the circus they had a couple of years ago. It's Will Fleming with the brunt of them next to Joe.
Jim Nantz back with CBS. He didn't get that Tony Romo money, but he got enough apparently.
He might have got Rich Gannon money. Or, I don't know what they're paying their other analysts, but that was never feasible. I know his agent floated it out there through another media reporter that. ESPN might be an option, but everything that I heard from sources at ESPN that they'd love to have Jim Nantz, but not at Jim Nantz prices. ESPN has spent the last couple of years paring back on high profiles and big salaried announcers and studio people, other than a couple of marquee names that they have. So the more you've seen more move on than you have, have seen stay there for big numbers. So. That was never happening, but it makes the most sense for Nantz to stay at CBS. That's where he's been. He's been the number one guy since 2006. He's been calling March Madness since 1991, somewhere around there. And he's most associated with the Masters, even beyond what he does for the NFL. So what they have for properties just really lines up with his skill set and what he's known for. So makes a lot of sense in the world for him to still be there. I think he's pretty happy with the terms and it's good for everybody. Man, he's a guy who should stay in that one place.
And a guy who I guess maybe was the big gun along with Musburger before Jim Nantz at CBS, the great Dick Stockton announcing his retirement after 55 years.
If it stays fair, right? That's what we all think of around here, the Carlton Fisk home run call, and then calling the Celtics games at CBS alongside Tommy Heinsohn. They did that together from 84 to 87, right in the heart of the Lakers-Celtics heyday. So he's extremely prominent. He was a sports director at WBZ before he was ever on the air. And his real big break in life was as a broadcaster was getting that 1975 World Series and getting to call that home run in Game 6. Back in those days, they would put on the local broadcasters for a couple of games.
Right.
And Stockton had never called baseball before getting the Red Sox job in 75. And he got to call that World Series. I think it was Games 2 and Game 6. And Game 6 is obviously an iconic game and with an iconic home run call by him. And he calls it the biggest break of his career, and you can see why. He did the Red Sox for 4 years and then went on to this incredible, versatile national career. So he was on high profile in recent years, but he's someone, if you followed sports broadcasting the last 50 years, you know well.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Check out Chad's predictions along with everybody else in the new Boston Globe Major League Baseball and Red Sox season preview. Chad, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir. You enjoy the rest of your Monday, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Good talking to you, Rich. Keep dodging those stalkers.
I'll do my best. Chad Finn with us on Downtown, trying to put a scare into me.